At least 15 people were shot outside a funeral home in Chicago's Auburn Gresham neighborhood on Tuesday night, adding to the drastic increase in homicides and shootings across that city over the past year. In response to the recent gun violence, the Trump administration said it would plan to send 150 federal agents to Chicago this week, and that would echo recent deployments of federal law enforcement to cities including Portland, Oregon, where federal agents have reportedly used unmarked cars to arrest and detain protesters. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot said on Wednesday that her city would collaborate with federal law enforcement, but she also expressed skepticism about President Trump's approach.
Unfortunately, we can't put anything past the Trump administration. I'm hopeful that they will not be foolish enough to bring that kind of nonsense to Chicago, but I'm also not naive, and we're going to be diligent and we're going to be ready. And if we need to stop them, we are going to.
We're going to be talking more about the Trump administration's deployment of federal law enforcement agents later in the show. In the meantime, the city's residents are trying to confront the threats of both gun violence and the coronavirus. And that's where we start today on The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Joining me now is Natalie Moore, reporter for Race, Class, and Communities at WBEZ in Chicago. Natalie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Also is with us is Demetrius Watley, a site director for Cure Violence Chicago, a community-based violence prevention organization. Demetrius, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
So, Demetrius, let's start with you. What do you see that are some of the factors driving the violence in Chicago right now?
Well, that's a few things that's driving it. I know one thing for sure is that a lot of the clubs and things are closing early, and a lot of parks are closing early, which are forcing a lot of individuals to come to these neighborhood blocks and gather 50 to 100 people at one time. And that's prime idea for a guy who's into it with somebody. If they see their target right there, they just shoot down the block and figure they'll hit somebody. Usually when you're in these clubs, the clubs don't close till 2 a.m. So after that, you usually go home or whatever. But now they just congregate on these blocks throughout the communities in Chicago, and it's sad.
And Demetrius, you're talking mostly about closures or early closures because of the coronavirus pandemic. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, correct.
And Natalie, you know, there's a lot of talk about when shootings and gun violence in particular happen in communities of color about what those shootings, what's prompting a lot of that. You wrote on Twitter, and I'm quoting here, that violence is the symptom of other inequities. Tell us what you meant by that.
If you look at the communities and the neighborhoods that have the most gun violence, it's going to be a handful of places. And these are the places that are the most racially and economically segregated. You see a lot of boarded up buildings. You see a lot of disinvestment. You don't see the same type of thriving Chicago that you see in other type of neighborhoods. And until segregation, disinvestment, economic development, and also mental health are addressed, we're going to keep seeing the same things over and over again.
Demetrius, you work on a violence prevention program in Chicago, and you work something that was called a violence interrupter. What does that mean? What was the type of work that you're doing?
So one thing about the violence interrupters, they work directly in the community, directly in the hot spots. What I mean by hot spots, areas where there's known shootings at, where shootings will occur. And what we do is we're there for 6 to 8 hours a day because we're from that community that we work in. So we know the individuals in the community. We know the young men and women in the community, the key players. So we're able to listen to everything that's going on and diffuse any situation that may arise. Mediate conflicts when they come up and basically try to change the mindset of the men and women that's out here in the street committing these acts of gun violence. So we're very hands-on.
It's very hands-on. And I'm wondering, you know, a lot of this is, you mentioned that if someone sees someone that they don't like, is a lot of the violence that we're seeing right now connected to gang activity or not?
Well, some of the stuff is historical. A lot of guys doing clout chasing. You know, it's monkey see, monkey do thing right now. We ask some of these guys, what are you fighting for? They can't give you a clear answer. They just knew they grew up on this block, and this block always hated the other block. So they feel that they have to continue with the same nonsense. And we've been trying to change their whole mindset about this gun violence all around the board. And those young guys, they listen. It's just that when you're not able to be out there 24 hours a day with them, then that's when the problems occur.
And Natalie, I'm wondering if your reporting can tell us anything about how effective some of these prevention efforts have been by community organizations in Chicago. I mean, I know Demetrius and other folks are out there trying to do their best, but how has that been working?
That's a really good question, because I think that there's also a myth that Black people don't care about interracial violence in their communities. When tragedies like this happen, with the shooting this week, there becomes this onslaught of, oh, they only care about police killings. They don't care about the people being killed in their own community. And that's just simply not true. The type of work that I see is hyper-local, from block club presidents to interrupters works to, you know, there's even a mom who set up a corner in the Inglewood neighborhood, you know, every day in the summer. There are social service organizations, community-based organizations. So there is efficacy that's going on in these communities, but they can't do it alone. You may see some dents, you may see some healing that goes on, and people maybe not retaliating or picking up a gun or giving youth options for an alternative. But again, I can't emphasize enough that, you know, those are temporary, those are band-aid approaches, and they're very important. I'm not undermining them. But
I want to talk a little bit about where we stand in this moment today. And I would like to ask both of you this question, because there are two polar opposite, I think, ideas that are floating around, or even actions, should I say, going beyond ideas. Protesters, as we've seen in the uprising for racial justice across the nation this summer, one of the demands, one of the biggest demands, has been to defund the police, which means essentially siphoning off a significant portion of police budgets to go to community organizations. On the other side of that spectrum, you have the Trump administration saying cities are out of control. We're sending in federal law enforcement agents, as we are going to see in Chicago. And it feels like what's happening here is that Chicagoans in particular, and other folks who are experiencing violence on a daily basis, gun violence, are caught in the middle of these two opposing forces. One which is saying defund the police, the other which is saying, you know, we're going to flood the zone with high elite, you know, tactical officers. So, Natalie, what's your thought on that? And Demetrius, I'd love to hear from you as well.
You know, I do think that Black people in Black neighborhoods have a complicated relationship with the police. In many ways, they feel under-policed, but also over-policed. But I think that the bottom line, where there is some agreement here, is that we can't police our way out of these issues, and that the police are being asked to do too much. And there are also questions about what are we asking the police to do that don't have anything to do with crime, such as writing parking tickets. You know, mental health is a huge issue, and a lot of times when people feel like they don't have anyone to call. And so when you have police officers who have no training in mental health come out to a situation, does that make the situation worse? So what are alternatives? So I think that these are good conversations to continue to have, but you're going to have people say, you know, there were police officers, you know, in the communities, they can't stop the crime from happening. There has to be something deeper to change in the communities, and looking beyond, we can't look at the police as the only source to do that.
Demetrius, what's your organization's relationship like with the Chicago Police Department? And tell us about what that's like. And I'm curious also to know your thoughts about where we find ourselves in this moment. But how does the organization deal with the Chicago PD?
Well, the way we deal with the Chicago police, as far as my team that's on the ground, they doesn't communicate with the police at all, as far as interaction with them, because of credibility issues. The same way with a lawyer and his client, that's the same way we approach our participants. So it's a trust issue and a credibility with our participant that we service. But on a higher level, they communicate with law enforcement throughout the city of Chicago. And also, I truly believe that there should be more funding going towards these community-based organizations. As far as what we do, we're able to get places where the police can't get. We're able to touch the community where police can't touch. We're able to talk to the young guys in the street because they trust us, because we come from that same community. And they know we have their best interests at heart. We're not trying to send them to jail, or we don't want to see them killed. So they listen to us. So I think we need more focus on those community-based organizations, those who have hands-on, those who can really reach these kids. Because like the sister said, our people have a lot of trust issues with CPD. I mean, they grew up with our trust issues. So it's been taught to them about don't trust the police. So guys like us and women like us who's out there in the street, we have to deal with these situations way better than the police can. And we've been kind of effective in the work that we do.
Natalie, Mayor Lightfoot has said that she is going to allow, at least temporarily, for the Trump administration to send additional federal law enforcement troops to the city. She since said that she would obviously keep an eye on that after receiving some criticism. So she walked that back a little bit. But where do things stand right now? And how is the community looking at Mayor Lightfoot in light of the recent outburst that we've seen in Portland, for example?
Mayor Lightfoot has not minced words in the past to President Trump, and as many listeners might have heard, the president often uses Chicago as a punching bag in his speeches with dog whistles about race, as well as attacking the city on Twitter. So I think that it's really, does he have any credibility, someone who hasn't shown any real empathy or understanding of Chicago's issues and has turned it into a partisan issue. With the mayor saying, we'll monitor, you know, I also think that there will be people in the communities who will be monitoring and making sure or alerting folks if they start seeing, you know, agents come out into communities and start doing arrests. I think that there will be significant resistance here in Chicago.
Well, we'll be paying close attention. Natalie Moore is a reporter for WBEZ, and Demetrius Watley is site director for Cure Violence Chicago. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.